History doesn't only inform and instruct us about our past, it could do the same for our present. Where we were can better clarify where we are and need to be headed. Next guest is a Pulitzer Prize-winning biographer and historian who, with his new book, takes us back to some of America's most challenging and divisive times to reveal that, in spite of the heat, America's hopes never melt, thanks to true leadership and engaged voices seeking liberty and equality, even demanding it. Many cases, his book is The Soul of America, The Battle for Our Better Angels. John Meacham, thanks for being here today, sir.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
JohnMeacham.com. Learn more about not only The Soul of America, but all of Mr. Meacham's books, of which this is one of my favorites because I'm a quoteaholic, and when you're quoting Thomas Jefferson, you got me sold. In a government like ours, it is the duty of the chief magistrate, in order to enable himself to do all the good which his station requires, to endeavor by all honorable means to unite in himself the confidence of the whole people. Is that even possible today, given the hair trigger that both parties have in opposing each other?
It has to be possible, because without it, we're in an existential crisis. Jefferson was talking about that in an era that, for him, felt as divisive as this one feels for us. He would have thought that the Federalists had a hair trigger against his Republican Party. The early 19th century, the first secessionist movement in the country was the Hartford Convention, and they were Federalists who wanted to break away, break New England away. I think there's a tendency, understandable, but I think wrong-headed, to look at the past as this kind of nostalgic period where everything was better than it is today. And that's a powerful narcotic. I understand it. But it does a disservice to the past and to the present because it minimizes the struggles and the achievements of the previous generations, and it forecloses the possibility of learning as much as we can from them. And what do we learn from them? We learn that we do best when we open our arms wider. The country has become stronger the more generously it's interpreted another sentence of Jefferson's. And by the way, I love the idea of being a quotaholic. I've never heard that. Do you have 12-step meetings? And you, I don't know what step you're on. But another thing Jefferson said was that all men are created equal. And the story of America, this is not a partisan point, it's a historical point. The story of the country is that we have grown stronger the more generously we have interpreted that single sentence.
Oh, by the way, there is no cure for quotaholism. One of the things I think you really address, too, is a lot of the off-to-the-side, unfortunately, ideas or elements or time periods. You write about the rising of the Ku Klux Klan in the late teens through the 20s. What did that time period with the re-existence of the KKK reveal about the presidents in that era and the different means by which to approach the challenges that and situations that the KKK created?
The second Klan, which was really refounded or founded in 1915 on Stone Mountain, Georgia, was a white movement. It was anti-Catholic. It was anti-Semitic. It was anti-black, anti-immigrant. It was coming along at a time when industrialization was increasingly a reality, when people who had been accustomed to their own way of life on farms were moving to cities, were moving to different jobs, and they were fearful that those jobs would be taken by immigrants, whether they were Irish Catholics or Southern Europeans or whatever. And on the West Coast, there was an enormous fear of the Chinese coming in. And so the movement began to take shape in order to, in their view, preserve a way of life from these new and foreign forces. Sounds somewhat familiar, doesn't it? President Wilson was not particularly good on it. Harding and Coolidge, whom we don't talk about very much, actually did more rhetorically than Wilson did in order to say that this was not American, that fraternal orders devoted to exclusion were not true to the best American principles.
Oh, best-selling author, Pulitzer Prize winner, John Meacham, his new book, The Soul of America, The Battle for Our Better Angels. JohnMeacham.com is his website. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. The issue of civil rights and race certainly still a topic today to varying degrees based upon someone's either personal or political beliefs. And the crux of the history seems to be planted within the LBJ administration. Are those people forgetting a lot about what Truman added to the flow of that part of history?
Harry Truman, his work on civil rights is overlooked, I think, because of the great drama, understandable drama, of King and Kennedy and Rosa Parks and Johnson, really from, it was a 10-year period, interesting, isn't it, from December 1st, 1955, when Mrs. Parks said she was not going to give up her seat on the bus in Montgomery to the passage of the Voting Rights Act in 1965. But President Truman, who was a Missouri border state guy, he had Confederate ancestors who were very much part of the "we hate Lincoln, we love Lee" culture of the time. Truman used racial slurs in private. But the fact of his national ascendance, the fact that he had become president after FDR died in April 1945, had a profound effect on him. Really, really kind of touching, if you will. He realized that he was now the president not just of white people, and he was not just representing the people of Missouri anymore. He was the president of all the people. And he gave a speech. He was the first president to address the NAACP at the Lincoln Memorial. In the Truman Library, there's a copy of the speech he was giving, talking about how civil rights were important for all Americans. And he wrote, that was the typewritten draft, and he wrote in his own hand, a very very distinctive handwriting style. "And when I say all Americans, I mean all Americans." He wanted to underscore the point. He integrated the military, not least because there were GIs coming home who were being lynched, African-Americans who had served their country abroad in the struggle against Nazi tyranny, who were being pulled off buses. One was blinded by a billy club nightstick in South Carolina. And Truman said, "My God, I had no idea it was as bad as that." And he wanted to move toward a more perfect union, which is what our best presidents and our best eras have done.
Can a president fix things without the engagement of the people?
There's no historical analogy for it. Now, there are some parts of the people that are always going to oppose certain reforms. There are some parts of the populace that are going to be in favor of it. And often the president, this is why the presidency matters, often the presidency is the deciding vote, as is the Congress, as are the courts. It's complicated. But if Lyndon Johnson in 1964 and 65 had not decided that he was going to risk a great deal of political capital to end Jim Crow and to open the ballot box to the actual genuine implementation of the 15th Amendment, which had been passed during Reconstruction, if Johnson hadn't decided that, it probably wouldn't have happened. But Johnson wouldn't have been able to be in a position to make that decision without the work of countless people, innumerable people, whose names we will never know, who bore witness bravely, risked their lives, gave their lives in some cases, around the South and around the country, basically saying, we just want the country to live up to its own assertion of identity. This is a country founded on an idea, the idea of equality of opportunity, of fair play. And what they were basically saying is, these were the rules you set, but you haven't extended the promise. But you have to extend the promise, and that was the work of the civil rights movement.
The book is The Soul of America, The Battle for Our Better Angels, johnmeacham.com. It is a history lesson for today's world, and it shows that history can indeed extinguish fears and concerns and be a guide for today. Thank you very much for doing that, Mr. Meacham.